Welcome to Founders Unfiltered by a Junior VC. We're your hosts, Mazin and Aviral. Aviral, as an investor, why is a SaaS business model so popular?
It's one of the best models out there in the market. But I think there are three things that make it so popular. First is that it's a recurring business. So once you're in, you're hooked. You don't have to spend money to acquire a customer. You don't have to spend money to market. That customer is on. You keep that customer on your books for as long as possible. So really predictable cash flows. Second is that the scalability of this model is so good. It is so high that you can start bringing a lot of revenue with probably the same size of the team. The third is that it's distributed over the internet. So you basically don't need to be in that particular location where you're selling or deploying the product, right? So you could be in India and you sell in the US, which is why like Indian SaaS businesses are so attractive. And putting all these three together makes it so compelling because you have predictable cash flows, you have very big cash flows, and you can just build and sell anywhere, so you have a huge market, right? So high predictability, good profitability, and big markets. That's what makes SaaS so attractive.
In this episode, we speak to Gaurav, the founder and CEO of SaaS Labs, and how he built several successful SaaS businesses over the years, leveraging some of those features of a SaaS business that you spoke about. Gaurav learned how to code when he was really young and built his first product while he was still in college. His hustle as a college student landed him a job in investment banking. But within 3 months, he knew that it was not for him. He quit and went to Bangalore, where he built several products. But it was a struggle for almost a year and a half. He learned, he made mistakes, but kept building. In February 2011, he built an analytics tool for Pinterest as a side project. And it went viral almost overnight. It got featured on several blogs. And within just 3 months, he sold the business. And he kept going. In the last few years with SaaS Labs, Gaurav has built 8 or 9 products catering to different themes. Each one is a self-sustaining business, with some of his products like Just Call generating millions in annual recurring revenue. Please enjoy our conversation with Gaurav about his incredible entrepreneurial journey and his playbook for building SaaS companies.
Hey Gaurav, thank you so much for agreeing to do this with us. We are really looking forward to having this conversation with you. You've had a very, very unique and interesting journey. Could you talk us a little bit about where you actually started building things, programming and coding? I think it goes all the way back to when you were in school.
Yeah, thanks for having me and looking forward to it. Just start with, my dad was actually into education. So he was in Air Force and then he got into education domain and he was a principal in a school. So I got access to computers very early on. So obviously I picked up programming very quick, very early. I think 11th or 12th, I think I had access to internet and that's how I sort of started coding. But the real sort of gig sort of started happening when I entered college. I was doing bachelor's in chemical engineering in IIT Warangal, but I very soon sort of realized that I can't be a great chemical engineer in my third sem itself. So I had to pick up something, you know, to build my career into. So I just picked up programming because that was sort of came to me pretty naturally.
Interesting. And I think after that, you built a virtual stock trading game in school, if I'm not wrong, or college. If you can talk us about that.
So during college, I built this thing, a thing called Winx. It was a pretty vast sort of online virtual stock exchange software or a product where people can actually come and, you know, play on it using a real-time market data from both NYSE and NSE. So 24-hour open in a way. And so almost it sort of went viral because we started it actually in our college fest, and then people from other colleges who were participating in the fest actually took it up. They started emailing us that, hey, we want to use this for our fest as well. So it picked up really well. We sort of covered all the good colleges in India. B-Tech or MBA schools. Plus also it sort of started getting picking up in Singapore, Germany and other countries as well. So we were sort of serving about 200,000 students regularly throughout this product. And thankfully, because of this whole Winnex, this whole stock market thing, I actually got a direct sort of offer, job offer from an investment bank right off out of my college. So that sort of really helped me, you know, to understand like how to build and scale very early on.
It's really hard to break into investment banking, and I think your hustle basically took you there. Could you talk us a bit about the Pinterest analytics tool that went viral? When did that happen? Sure. How was it related to your job?
After joining the job, within 3 months, I was pretty sure that I'm not going to continue working for someone else, and I should start something. And on 15th August, I got the idea, and on 16th August, I put in my paper. After a month, I was in Bangalore with a few hundred rupees in my account to start something. I mean, I was running a couple of products, but yeah. So my first product actually was into Twitter advertising. It was a contextual Twitter advertising, first of its kind. It's about 2000. I think it's about 2010. I'm talking about. So Twitter was yet to start an advertising product of theirs. So it was one of the early advertising products. But I committed the same very typical Indian entrepreneur problem, that I priced that product very low, right? I mean, this is a very common thing I noticed among all the first-time entrepreneurs in India, that I didn't charge much for my product. So although I had the scale, I mean, the reach of the whole network was almost tens of millions of people on Twitter, and I had like 10,000 plus advertisers, but I was making like nothing. So it was almost a struggle for almost 1.5 years or so. But then I was seeing Pinterest as a social network, as a platform, picking up in US that time. So I'm talking about 2011 now. I remember the date as well. So on 26 February 2011, I built something, a sort of analytics for Pinterest, and also coined a term called Pinfluence, which is now also a part of Urban Dictionary. So build as tool where you can put in your Pinterest profile and you'll get a score out of 100. It was something like cloud score for all your social media, right? So yeah, it just went viral. I mean, the next morning I woke up and I saw my sort of servers burning, because at that time there was, again, I don't remember if there was AWS or it was that big at that time. So I used to use some of those shared sort of servers. So I saw my servers burning, got an email from the server hosting company like, hey, your account will be suspended because of the traffic, blah, blah, blah. Because we got featured on a lot of blogs like Mashup and all the big blogs. And people actually started putting on their LinkedIn profile as well that, hey, my influence score is XYZ. So it sort of picked up really well. And within 3 months, we got a lot of investment and acquisition offers. At that time I was actually traveling to US to do some sales for my ongoing business, and we just accepted a deal, and that's how I sold that product, or that was my first exit as a business owner.
If you can tell us a bit about what prompted you to move to India and how you started off SaaS Labs.
Yeah, so I moved to US and built another company, scaled up really well into like millions of dollars in revenue. Within a couple of years, I just, so my that time girlfriend, now wife, was actually doing her MD in pediatrics here in India. So I just decided, you know, to go back and do something new, because the business I was running in US actually became pretty much autonomous. And there's no much excitement left in that business. So I just, I got bored and, you know, moved back to build something more bigger back in India. So yeah, so I just decided that let's go back to India and build something. Also, I think one more thing that prompted the idea was that I really liked the model. So I was actually a part of this company called Science. It's a startup studio in Los Angeles in US. So they used to have this model where you have a central marketing, sales and hiring and tech teams where you come up with ideas, you build some MVP sort of products and launch it. If it picks up some traction, you spin out a separate team altogether for it. So I really loved that model because there were so many success stories from it, like Dollar Shave Club, Dog Wake, and all, and our business as well. So I just wanted to sort of replicate the same model, but for profitable and revenue-generating product. Obviously, SaaS is the best in that category. So yeah, so 2015-ish, I took a break for almost 1 year. Tried my hand at. I moved to Chandigarh because obviously from coming from US, to stay in Delhi, it's a big change. So I thought like Chandigarh is the most, I think people call it the most beautiful city. So I moved to Chandigarh for 1 year and had some great time there. But then eventually decided that I have to come back and build something new again. And so 2016 started the new journey with SaaS Labs. So it was Feb 2016 when I decided to start the new company, SaaS Labs.
From India to the US, then back to India, played golf for a year, and then SaaS Labs started from there. And you can tell us a bit more about your journey with SaaS Lab and how you came up with Just Call.
So SaaS Labs basically is the same idea like science I told about. So it's basically it's like a lab where we come up with the ideas. We have some certain theses that we have put in place. So the thesis is this is in this way that there are 3 points. One is every business. This is 2016 thesis that we started SaaS Labs with. So every business is gonna adopt automation in their business processes. Second, every business will move to cloud from their whatever software they're using right now. And the third is every business will hire more remote talent or they'll be working more remotely. So this was in 2016, we came up with this thesis and we started and we decided that we'll be building SaaS products that sort of justify or sort of fit in well into this same thesis. So that's how we started building some products and we built a couple of products. They started making a few $100,000, but they were not a big success, but they were like making, okay, some money to sustain a bit or be just a bit unprofitable or whatever, but as a small burn rate, basically. So one day, one of my salesperson told me that, hey, I want a US number. And if you can get me a US number, I'll start calling US folks, US agencies, and I'll start selling more. I'll obviously help you increase the revenue. And I got him a Skype phone number for a US. For US. And after 2 months, I didn't see any uptick in the sales. So I asked this guy like, hey, what happened? I got you a US number. So he told me that, hey, I'm making a lot of calls. I'm getting good responses, but I don't know why the conversion is not happening. So just to want to make sure that he's pitching the product right or he's actually making calls or not, I thought we should have a product where we should build something internally where we can at least track the calls or at least listen to the call recordings. So on a random weekend, I also write code and other couple of engineers, very, very small team that time. So we sort of, over a couple of beers, we just built a very small tool for our own use. And within a few weeks or probably a month or two, we realized how useful this can be for people like me who are running small teams or managers or anything, any sort of leader who wants to track something, right? So that sort of made us realize that this is something we can launch. And I think it'll be easy to find a few hundred companies around the world who will be in our same situation like us and will need a product like this. So that's how we founded Just Call. So we launched it on Product Hunt on 2nd December 2016. For 3 months, we were still figuring out what sort of market we can reach out to. In the initial days, our positioning was, get your business international presence by getting a phone number in US or any other foreign country with a click of a button. But then one of our early customers actually came to our office. He was a US-based customer. He was in Thailand for his honeymoon. So either during the honeymoon or after that, he actually visited us in Noida office. And he's sitting opposite to me in my office. And he told me that, hey, I love your product. It's very, pretty easy to use. I want to invest in your company. And by the way, you should also integrate with some CRM or Pipedrive. So that's the first time we actually heard about Pipedrive or CRM, right? So once So once we figured out what CRM is, what other things, what other business tools are, and what integration is, that's when the whole game sort of changed. Although we didn't take the money from that person, but he totally helped us change our game and change our positioning. So the positioning became a phone system that integrates with your business tools and makes call logging automated. So that's the new position. That's the new position we started with, and that just picked up really well.
Really cool story. And I believe you also had another SaaS startup that you created more recently, which came out of the program.
Yep. So we have this program. It's like a Y Combinator like program where we set aside $20,000 for any idea that we as a team decide that we can get into. And that idea should actually follow or should go through those three thesis points that we that I talked about. It should bring about automation, it should be cloud, or it should be helpful for remote teams. So the when our support team of Just Call started growing up, so when a team starts growing up, what you do is like you have email IDs like help@company.com or sales@company.com. You start actually sharing passwords for the emails. I mean, that's pretty common. But as the team grows from 2 people or 5 people support team to 25 people support team, you can't continue that practice, because that firstly it's unsafe. Obviously, if someone wants to go rogue or something, I mean, that'll be real risky for the business. But otherwise, you can't track, you can't assign things. So the whole productivity issue comes in here, or whole efficiency sort of comes in here, or a whole accountability problem comes in here. So we started using a couple of products in the market for shared inbox or team inbox sort of softwares. For almost a year or so, we used those products, and our teams were not really happy. They had some problems or some sort of requirements around those products. So we thought of, again, to build something internally, because we are very heavy on building internal tools to automate our processes. So, and that has actually helped us, keep our headcount lower, even though we've grown fast in terms of revenue. So we built some tool for emailing to our customers and tracking the emails and everything, like proper team sort of inbox for ourselves. And using our team's inputs, we sort of improved that product. And I think very soon we realized that the product is ready enough to compete with other players in the market. And that market of shared inbox was actually exploding, because we saw our competitors, but those products actually getting a lot of funding and getting higher up in the valuations and blah, blah, blah. So it actually gave us a signal that the market is actually opening up for it. So there's an opportunity to start a new product, which also integrates with Just Call. So it'll be easier for us to, go to market by pitching our current customers itself and get like 200 customers to start with. So yeah, so again, being a bit superstitious, we launched HelpWise on the same date we launched Just Call. So 2nd December 2019, we launched HelpWise on Product Hunt. And yeah, I mean, it just picked up really well. So it was, I think, fourth product of the day on Product Hunt. So we got some listings. We worked a lot on SEO and all that. So very quickly, we picked up and we crossed over 100K ARR for the product very, very quickly. And it's growing double digit month on month, even now. And yeah, I mean, our target is to, catch $1 million ARR faster than Just Call for HelpWise.
Amazing. So with so many SaaS startups over the years, I'm sure there were a lot of learnings and a lot of things that you understood. And so I would like to dive into the playbook that you put together. So you can tell our listeners a bit more about the best practices and how you built your SaaS companies. But before we do that, just to set the context, it's probably obvious to you, but can you help our listeners understand why SaaS companies are so highly valued and what makes them different from other startups?
So the playbook is actually, so HelpWise, the product, is actually one of the first adopters of the playbook. Right? I mean, we built that playbook and then started adopting it point by point. And the kind of success we have seen in the growth of HelpWise, it totally validates the kind of playbook that we have put together. Coming to SaaS as a business model, I love the part of SaaS is the compounding part. So it always compounds. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jason Lemkin. If you read his blog post or Quora answers, I mean, out of 10 posts, in 5 times he'll be saying that SaaS compounds. And that's very true. Because whenever you're selling someone a recurring sort of revenue with some sort of expansion of that account in place, there'll be an automatic expansion happening in your revenue. So you don't have to sell it again. And the team sizes will increase on your product or whatever will happen. So it always compounds. The second thing is it brings in the predictability, right? I mean, if I did $1,000 on in January in recurring revenue, I know that in Feb I'll be starting with $1,000 again, won't be $0. So unlike e-commerce or any transaction based business where my future is not predictable yet, so that what makes SaaS very sort of risk-free in a way, and that's why the valuations are higher, because you have some sort of guarantee, a sort of a fixed deposit, sort of like a guarantee that the investment going into it will generate at least some sort of returns. So that safety net, I think, makes it very a good investable sort of business, and that's why actually I also put a lot of my personal money into growing SaaS companies in India and outside as well.
So let's dive into this playbook step by step that you use so effectively with HelpWise. So step one is pick a multi-billion dollar business or industry that's growing by double digits year over year. Step two is learn to code or get someone to write code for you. So question for you, how did you learn how to code? I know you said you got a computer and learned pretty early. And also, what are your thoughts on what's better for a non-tech person? I know there's some debate about it. Not everyone knows how to code. A lot of people think they can't learn.
Yeah, sure. So how I learned the code? So I learned the basic, obviously, through internet. But the fastest way to learn code is, you know, to pick the problem and start learning the coding part by solving that problem. For example, so I wanted to build a Yahoo-like website in my during my first year or probably 12th class or something like that. That's actually when I started learning proper coding, right? I mean, to, you know, build some sort of products. So my questions were like, how to search, right? Or how to create a login and registration page, how login and registration page works. So I built the whole the idea, like I have to build like these 5 pages and these things should happen. And one by one, internet is your best friend. One by one, start solving the problems. How to log in, how to create a login page. You just solve that problem, you learn so much that you can apply those learnings to your probably next page, like a registration page. Then you'll be able to create a dashboard page by taking the learnings from your login and registration page learnings. So pick up a project, pick up some idea and start building it and start typing in the questions on Google, like how to do this. And eventually you'll figure out. Obviously, theory is important, but I have learned in a very practical way. If you give me a theory question right now, I mean, the question paper right now, I'll score nothing in it. But if you give me some problem to solve, probably I'll be able to build by writing code. So, I mean, that was my strategy. Coming to people who can't code, in current scenario, it's even coding is not a big problem because there's so many no code sort of tools in the market. For example, Zapier is there. Then there are a lot of other Airtable. Now those products are there. No code products are there where even the engineer, your coding skills are not required. You can connect to just to create an MVP, a basic product. You can always create. You can use Webflow to put up your site together. To do some sort of flows. You can use Zapier to put in some automation. You can again use Zapier or some other products. And if your idea is very, very complex, then obviously, I mean, you'll have to obviously get a co-founder. Or my personal advice is actually to learn, because the code, if you're building a tech company, I mean, you should get some top level knowledge of it. Or you can actually hire. So I started SaaS Labs. I'll tell you, I started SaaS Labs by hiring a Russian guy, a Russian coder first. You know, so that was my first employee, not someone full time, but I hired a Russian guy. Worked with him to build our first product. So, and it costed me nothing. It costed me, I think, $400 or so to get a small product built. So that's another option. So I used Upwork for that. So that's another option for you to sort of use. But you can do it only if you have some top level knowledge about coding, right? So yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I've had a similar experience as well. Learned how to code a similar way that you did. So there's really no excuse for someone who wants to start a startup.
Absolutely.
Work their way around it. So moving on, step three, as you said, build a good product because awesome products take time. So start with a good MVP. And step four is figure out early distribution channels.
Yeah.
Now you spoke a bit about Product Hunt. Can you tell us a bit about which distribution channels worked well for you and for someone who's just starting off, which channel should they consider?
Absolutely. See, so for 3 months we had no idea like how to distribute our product. So we used to just send cold emails or spamming on LinkedIn, and that sort of never sort of worked for us. But when one of our customers I told about when he came to our office and told us about the integration part, like integrated with a CRM. And through that CRM, you can log your phone calls into the CRM and XYZ. But the benefit of that was, so when once you integrated with the CRM, for example, in this case, was Pipedrive. So they actually gave us a listing on their marketplace. And also, they gave us a shout-out on their what's up, what's new in the month, something like that. So they had a blog post on in that. They were like, hey, we have integrated with JustCall. And that sort of sent us like 20, 30 odd new customers in a boom, right? So for us, the distribution channel was integrations. So once we figured out that one integration can get us 30, 40 customers, so why not we build like 40 odd or 50 odd integrations? And that's exactly what doubled on, right? I mean, for next 2 years, 17 and 18, we just worked on integrations and we just started creating partnerships and relationships with folks who are handling partnerships on the other side, like on the CRM side or the help desk side, whatever we're integrating with. And we became good friends with them. And because of that, we started doing a lot of co-marketing, right? So for me, for our company distribution channel, the best channel was integrating it with other products. And mostly those products are bigger products, well-funded, growing. So you just ride that tide. So yeah, so that's my take on that. And so whatever companies I invest in, at least SaaS, I always tell them that make sure the integration is one of your GTM.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that as a distribution channel.
See, we get 200 new customers every month for free of cost because of these integrations. We don't spend anything on it. Most of these deals are happening quickly because they are coming through something they're already paying for. And so those leads are already half sold because they have seen us on HubSpot or Pipedrive. They know that HubSpot must have done their homework to list us on their website. So whenever they come to us, they'll be like, hey, we found you on HubSpot. How can you get started? Right. So it's the long term. It's a great sort of benefit.
Makes sense. So now step five, bring in 10 unknown customers. So these are people who are not your friends and family by being a shameless salesperson.
Yeah.
Step six, offer the best ever customer experience to early customers. Impress them with care and love. And step seven is give product demos to each and every new customer and learn about their use case during this process.
Yeah.
So clearly it's all about customers once you get past that initial phase. So can you tell us what questions do you ask customers at this step? And do you have any tips or tricks on how to exceed customer expectations?
Sure. So one is the speed of replying, right? And that's like given. I mean, if you can answer that person's chat or email within like a couple of minutes or 5 minutes, 10 minutes, that will differentiate. That will give you a very good differentiator against the bigger companies. Because the bigger companies send you a reply, an automated reply immediately, and then after a 24-hour gap, they send you a reply. If you start doing that, you start giving 5 minutes, 2 minutes of replies. That's one game to begin with. The second is, so for us, what we did was we took a big decision. Like, although we were short in cash, we were bootstrapped and starting up, we decided to go 24-hour in providing our support. For that, what we did was we hired people from Philippines. So again, I went to Upwork, hired a person who can work in USRs and had already worked in call centers. So I hired that person for about $600-$700 a month. And there we had like 24-hour support, and that sort of worked really well for us as well. Coming to what sort of questions you asked. So in the early stage, we sort of started asking like, how are you finding us? So one was that, so that we can figure out what sort of channel is working for us so that we can double down on that. And the second step, can you explain us your use case, how you're using our product? Right, so that we can figure out, we can build better features around those use cases so that we can attract the same customers using their name. Right, so that was second sort of question. And third was, if someone is leaving us, then we'll obviously ask again, like, hey, where did we go wrong? And how can we improve this thing to have you back in the near future? Something like that. So these three, four questions we used to ask. And that's, again, why this is one of the reasons why I told that we should be having demos with every early customer, or at least every customer for that matter. Because that gives you the use case clarity, right? And once you have a use case clarity, you can build your product. And you can build your positioning, you can build your marketing copies and everything around that use cases. So understanding the use case is very important. And the funny part is that in neither me or nor my any team members come from a experience or background of cloud telephony or you know, all these tools. It's everything is what we have learned from our customers. And this was possible because we started talking to them very early on.
Yeah, makes sense. Talk to your customers. And the next 2 points kind of build on this idea as well. Number 8 is ship new updates and features on a daily basis based on customer feedback. And number 9 is write help guides and create videos for every single feature and for account setup.
Yeah.
So I imagine that customers give you crazy feedback at times. How do you go about prioritizing which features to add?
Mm-hmm. So we basically, what we have is, so we have a sort of monthly and quarterly and sort of yearly a plan for a product. So there's a straight line which we have already sort of built. All right, okay, this is features we're gonna build, and we compare these requests, these feedbacks against that line. So if it falls nearby that line, if it's like a simple add-on to that, we can add it to our roadmap. And if this looks like a future add-on, what we started doing was we started pitching the professional services on it, basically. So I've seen many of the SaaS companies in, at least in India, they don't opt for professional services and which they should. So by professional services, I mean, obviously you tell them that, okay, we'll assign a couple of engineers on it, and this is how long it's going to take for customization, and this is the amount of extra cost, one-time fees it's going to cost you, plus you'll have to commit for an annual plan with us, right? So if the problem is really it's a very good problem for that company, they'll agree to it. So the benefit of this is that you anyways had to build that product feature, so you got actually paid for that. Second is the commitment is now for 1 year, so the churn has gone down. And third is, now that the customer has already invested in the product, you expect the customer to remain with you for longer time, right? And fourth is a bonus. If you keep that person happy after the customization, he or she will give you an amazing review on G2 or whatever, that these guys built something special for me. So it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, that's amazing. So almost turn it around and get validation upfront before you build.
Yeah, yeah.
So moving on, number 10, create process around sales and customer support. Hire one for sales and one to supports and start following these processes. And number 12, coach new hires every day and enable them to take their own decisions.
Yeah.
So this is actually a pretty big step, you know, going from step 9 to 10, where you're actually starting to create a sales team.
Yeah.
At what point in your journey do you start to hire salespeople? How do you know that you're at the right phase to take this step?
I mean, on an average, I've seen, so if your ticket size is like an average SMB sort of ticket size, which is like $100 per month to say $500 per month, and you've already done like 10 odd sales yourself, or your co-founder, or you, whatever early members have done, then you know that there are 10 customers, you have unaffiliated customers that you never knew about, there were no connection between those customers, and they actually started paying you. So it means the product is ready for selling, right? So So that's exactly how sort of we decided that we should be getting salespeople. And also, it also depends on your lead velocity, like how quick, how many leads you're getting and how many leads you are able to handle. So in early days, we were like 4 or 5 engineers and we used to do everything. Like we used to write code and we used to also make calls and demos and everything. But then we started missing a lot of leads and we started missing a lot of follow-ups. So that's when we decided that, okay, now we're working at our 150% sort of capacity. So it's better we pull it off a bit and, you know, get someone full-time on board. So yeah, once things start getting out of your hand, once things start getting a bit late, then it's time to, you know, get a full-time person, not before that.
It's actually quite simple.
Not before making any sales. I mean, if you haven't made any sales, don't hire a salesperson. You should sell first and then only you hire a salesperson. Because once you have an idea about the whole sales cycle, then only you'll be able to hire the right person.
Absolutely. This is something that I've seen before. You know, people think that they can hire a salesperson to sell for them, but the founder need to be the first salespeople.
When we launched HelpWise, it was a new product altogether, but I did the same thing. I started selling. I mean, although Jasper was doing pretty well, we had some people in the team who could have done the sales for us, but I just wanted to follow the playbook, that's all. So, and yeah, and it sort of worked for us. And now, a couple of weeks back, I think 2 weeks back, we hired our first salesperson for HelpWise.
Nice. So, yeah. There's validation for the playbook step itself.
Yeah.
And so, the next few steps, number 13, start working on customer success. Ensure every new customer is getting the most out of the product. 14 is set up NPS collection and measure NPS every month. That's Net Promoter Score. 15 is create a process around handling 0 to 3, 3 to 8, and 9 to 10 ratings.
Yeah.
Step 16, once some basic process is built, hire someone to handle customer success. And step 17 is when someone gives you a 9 or 10 on NPS, that's the best time to ask them for a review. So make sure you do this at the right time. So I mean, all of these steps relate to measuring customer satisfaction and NPS specifically. It looks like you're kind of built around the NPS survey. So first of all, why do you think NPS specifically is so effective? Are there some other ways to measure what your customers think of your product? And the one thing that I've heard about is asking customers, how would they feel if they no longer have access to your product? Is that something that you've tried? Just want to kind of get your thoughts on NPS and generally what else works.
So in our case, at least in cloud telephony, there's so many products in the market. So if there won't be an absolute love that you'll get from your customers, because there's so many players in the market, and the unique part of the market here is that the customer spends and rotates among those players in the market. So even if I'm giving the best service, someday they'll get a bad reception on their phone call or something, and they'll be like, okay, we are moving to another service because the phone quality, the call quality is not good here. Or they'll be using some other product, they'll have a bad quality there and then come to us. So in such sort of markets, I mean, we sort of had a debate about this, that should we go for a NPS in terms of like 0 to 10 or like would you like refer it to someone else, or if we take out the product from the market, how heartbroken you'd be, something like that. So we just decided, you know, we should go for a more sort of a basic one in that case, because there's no true love as such, and it's nothing unique in that sense as a product. I just want to talk about the customer success in general, like from the context of an Indian SaaS startup that I've seen. So we mostly sort of focus on sales. We focus on getting new customers. And retention normally takes the backseat. And we also committed the same mistake early on. So we never sort of focused on the retention part of it. And it was either customer support, which was reactive, and it was sales. So there was no proactive thing happening within the team for a long time. And we saw a churn go up a bit because of that. And once we started becoming more proactive in terms of support or whatever, taking care of the customers, we saw the churn like fall, sort of do a nosedive there. So customer success is something the company should adopt very, very early. This is a mistake that we did with JustCall, and we're making sure that we don't do that with HealthWise.
That's a really good tip, especially for Indian SaaS founders. Focus on reducing churn and customer retention as much as you focus on sales and the other components of it. So yeah, I think that's a really good tip. And now for the last few steps in the playbook, now that you're starting to get some positive reviews, add those to your website. That's number 18. Number 19, and I think this is an important transition. Once you get to this step, you can start generating some paid traffic via Google Ads, Facebook. And since you already have a process in place, sales and support will kind of take care of this new traffic once it comes in. And number 20, once you start getting some new paid customers, it's time to hire someone for product marketing and to start scaling up paid marketing and content marketing. So once you have this process in place, it's kind of a difficult step. You know, can you tell us how you went about transitioning to this kind of scale up mode, if I can call it that? You know, once you are happy with your product, you have product market fit, you want to start putting money into the engine and getting more money. Like, the first thing is, how do you know that you're there, that you've reached that high point? And then secondly, like, if you can tell us from your experiences what you did.
Sure. So how you get to know about it? So for almost 2.5 years or so, or 3 years, we were growing. So the chart, the whole graph was like upward sort of movement. And then we started seeing some sort of flattening of the curve there. And plus we were making a lot of profit. So we were big time profitable almost very early on, probably 6 or 7 months in the operations or so of JustCall, we started making some profits. So there was a lot of cash accumulating in our bank accounts. The curve was actually flattening. We had a lot of cash. So we started doing some experiments, basically. And also, to scale up, you should also have the idea about your CAC, right? The cost of acquisition customer, so that you can deploy that capital, that cash you have in the bank, to get the best returns out of it. Or you can, if you're not getting a good CAC or good CAC numbers, you can rather invest that capital into something else, probably a new product or acquiring some company or whatever it is. So we want to figure out what the CAC number for our products, for JustCall at least. And is it profitable? Is it, does it make sense or not? Is the CAC one-fourth of the LTV or not, right? So we just want to figure that out. So we started with a small amount. So I only started the small experiments, wrote some couple of copies of Google Ads and Facebook Ads, spent like $1,200. And we started getting some good results, actually. And once we started getting some good results, that okay, we got like for $1,000, we got like 2 paid customers who will pay back the whole money within 3 or 4 months. We thought that okay, I mean, if we can make from $1,000, if we can make $2,000 in a year, or for every $1 we are generating $2 of ARR, let's start with $10,000 now, and can we generate $20,000 now with $10,000? So we did that, and then we saw the same number happening, like $10,000 generated $20,000 of ARR. We thought that okay, it's time to scale. We have a lot of cash in the bank. We recently had grown our team, almost doubled our team. So we were pretty much ready for it. So we were just planning for it, you know, to grow, and slowly grow slowly, and have all the processes in place, and then only we started spending more. Coming to how to make ourselves ready for scale. So every new year we have this kickoff sort of meeting where I come up with the whole annual plan, like what we gonna do, what's our targets for the year, what percentage we gonna grow. So for this year, for example, or previous year, we had some big goals, and for that, what I did was I made my flat structure company into a more structured sort of company, and I, for the first time, we had proper roles like manager and all that. So that was one of the reasons why I came up with that, because because in the flat hierarchy, I mean, you can't continue for very long. So So I had to come up with the proper structure of reporting, like who will report to whom, so that things don't break. And once that was in place, I started coaching the managers that I recently sort of promoted people to. I started coaching them. It took me almost 6 months or so to, you know, make sure that everyone knows their job, they're doing the delegating work right, correctly and everything. Only after that, and I was learning a parallel experiment for the ads. So once everything was set, I just sort of pulled the trigger on that.
Makes sense. I think that was super helpful. And if somebody follows this, I think it might just be a very good playbook to actually scale a company. So I think one final question that we ask all the founders who come and speak to us and are trying to chat with us, what's that unfiltered piece of feedback that you have received that has helped you in your journey?
So, I mean, the best feedback I've got is like, hey, you can do a lot of bigger, you can do a lot bigger things. Why are you sort of working on smaller sort of products? I got this feedback right before probably when I started SaaS Labs. So probably that's something which triggered sort of the founding of SaaS Labs. So I was playing a round of golf with someone, and that guy knew that I'm running small SaaS products which are making like 200-300K a year, and I was having a good life. So this guy told me that, hey, so he was junior to me, like even in college. So he was like, sir, aapko, you should do something bigger. Why are you stopping yourself for a smaller few crore sort of businesses? So that sort of triggered me to start SaaS Labs. And now the whole team of SaaS Labs and myself are pretty much determined, you know, to create this profitable business and probably go an IPO probably 2025. And that's how we're actually building the whole business. The whole processes in the company are, you know, preparing us for that. So we want to build a SaaS company that goes public in Indian market probably in 4 or 5 years.
And now, a quick summary of what we discussed with Gaurav of SaaS Labs. After his first exit in India, Gaurav moved to the US, where he built another company that scaled up really well to millions of dollars in recurring revenue. The company became fairly autonomous. So he got bored and he decided to move back to India and build something bigger. Inspired by Science Inc., a venture builder that he was part of in the US, Gaurav decided to build a startup studio in India. That's how SaaS Labs was born in 2016. One of his most successful products, Just Call, actually started off as a tool that they built for themselves so that they could sell their own products in the US. Based on his experiences, Gaurav created a 20-point SaaS playbook, which he used for his newest product, HelpWise.io, and it helped them to grow to over $100,000 in annual recurring revenue in just 4 to 5 months. And I believe that any entrepreneur looking to build a SaaS company can learn from Gaurav's experiences and his playbook that he has been kind enough to share publicly. Thank you so much for tuning in to Founders Unfiltered. I've got a favor to ask you. Will you take a minute to review us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening? Thank you.